Hey everybody, it's Nolan North, you know, Nathan Drake from Uncharted, and you're listening to the Geek Apocalypse, our podcast.
Hello everybody, welcome to a rather late edition of the Geek Apocalypse podcast with yours truly, Mr. Stephen Hesse. I apologize for the delay, but if you follow us on the tweets, which is @geek_apocalypse, you would have seen, hopefully, the odd tweet of me saying that I'm dying of a fever-related disease. Which is hilarious because I got it from kissing a person on a date, which ended up not working out. So I not only ended up staying single, but also got a very unfriendly bacterial disease known as, well, it was a fever that led to strep throat, which if you Google, I recommend Googling and see how incredibly unpleasant it is. So basically you get swollen glands, very much like tonsillitis, and a sore throat just intensified by 100 times, like you're sort of swallowing glass. And with me, fat, I have had a fever with it. I was bedridden for at least 2 weeks, and really over this week, really, and this weekend is only when I've started to feel human. Also, because they no longer treat it with antibiotics, as you are contagious during this period of time until your symptoms ease up. So I was basically in a quarantine zone, which was my house. And you know when you're in a bad situation when you're 29 years old and you're ringing your mom up going, please come and look after me, because I'd reached the point where I couldn't actually feed my dog because I was in that much pain. So not fun at all. I also lost my voice for a bit as well, so I couldn't do any of these intros. So this provides me with the context of who today's guest is, because we recorded this 2 weeks ago, which when I was starting to feel a little bit better with my fever, and then I got worse as the days progressed after this. So this is with Pamela Naidu, who I was super excited to talk to because she sent me an email about the fact that she'd wrote a book, the only book of its kind, she claims, called Just Friends, Ultimate Girl's Guide to Male Friendships, and the idea is about having platonic friendships with the opposite gender, which I'm a huge advocate of. One of my closest friends, Nicola, is female, and I've had really good female friends in the past. I believe it's a really, really important part of, like, 21st century thinking, and it's not all about sex, which is what we talk about. Talk about one-night stands, which is interesting, and the research behind it, because she did a lot of research into you know, the statistics of things, and it was interesting about one night stands, talking about that and just how platonic friendships can be meaningful and important and just as relevant, especially hopefully with the equality in jobs, which I found interesting. And she was originally from South Africa, which we talked about, and she moved to London, which is how where she was talking while we did this conversation. It's a really, really good back and forth, and I found it fascinating, so I hope you guys do too. So I'm going to release this, as well as Alex from BattleBards returns, a good friend of the show, to talk about what BattleBards is up to, which is audio software for your role-playing games, which is really super great. So that pretty much covers it, as well as Mentally Sound. We've got the recordings for the next 2 episodes, because we're on Spice FM now, so we're going to release them, which is a mental health show, so do check that on iTunes, and obviously subscribe to this on iTunes as well. But go to platonicplanet.co.uk for more information about Pamela, and obviously on Amazon for our book. But this is Pamela Naidu.
Enjoy!
Thank you for coming on the show. I'm really, really appreciative of being here. Hi guys, I'm here with Pamela. Is it Naidu, did you say?
Naidu.
I was so close. We spent so long, like, usually whenever I do, like, little pre-introductions, the listeners know this, is I make this joke of that we do an intro and I never use it, and, like, we spent about a minute of that, me going, so how do you say your surname? How do you say that? So I apologise, so we'll get that right eventually.
No problem.
But huge thank you for coming on the show. When you sent me the email declaring your interest in being on, I was really excited because, as I was just saying to Pamela before we started, is that this is a subject matter that really interests me, and friendship is something that I've wrote about just in blogs and stuff like that, and it comes up a lot in loads and loads of guests that we've talked about, how, you know, important it is in people's lives. And so obviously Pamela is here to talk about it's Just Friends. Basically it's a platonic guide to friendship, and it's sort of, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, because one of the things that you interested me about was you said it was kind of focusing on from a girl's point of view. Is that fair?
That is correct. So it's a girl's guide to male friendships, and the book is specifically targeted for women, although many guys have read the book also and found it very beneficial because it does contain generic elements about how we initiate friendships and conversations and how we go about handling making this work for long term.
Yeah, exactly, because you said something to me in our sort of, I guess, pre-interview, you can call it, where the thing that sort of really fascinated me was you said that, and I want you to elaborate on it if you don't mind, where you said that there are books of this nature around, but this is the sort of first book that deals with platonic friendships. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. So Just Friends is the first book dealing with platonic friendship and encouraging friendships. Mm-hmm. Most books are targeted for dating and relationships or dealing with sexual interactions with your friends.
Yes.
They have some sort of intimacy created within the books. And obviously that sells. Friendships, they've been generic same-sex friendship books, but this is the first targeting opposite-sex friendships.
Yeah, and which is interesting, because obviously we should say at this point, for those that don't know, platonic basically means non-sexual. So it's sort of... So would it be fair to say, you know, I mean, it implies to me when I was reading about the book and the fact that it's the first one, it implies, and I'm wondering whether you thought this in coming up with the idea, is there essentially a stigma or stereotype in regards to maybe that male and female can't be friends, or is it something more complicated?
So firstly, I think you're absolutely right. There's a massive stigmas that people can't believe that we can be friends. And the media is largely responsible for that, because Western media, as to date, never portray two people of the opposite sex platonically existing.
Yeah.
And subconsciously and continuously, they remind us that two people of the opposite sex will inevitably have some sort of romantic interest or even end up in one. So, you know, that's what we were shown by media. But where the book actually becomes really, why it's so necessary for us to work on platonic relationships is that we now live in a day and age where, you know, we work together, and we're men and women are working together, taking on the same jobs, taking on the same careers, playing the same sports, and we interact with each other now more than ever before. So platonic friendships, you know, they're not only the exception, they actually are becoming the rule.
Yeah. That's fascinating. And so do you think, like, so can you elaborate on what you meant? Because the second part of my first question was going to be, because I said it's the first book of its kind, but my sort of implied question within that was, you said to me before we started that there's a lot of books, and you've sort of hinted on it, there's a lot of books that talk about it from the male point of view, potentially, and or about, like you say, it's all about, you know, sort of, I guess, sexual relationships or the implications of that. And so do you think, I'm interested by the point you said about, because we talk about this a lot on this show, about sort of about mainstream media and how they portray things. And so like in a more elaborate sense, like, can you describe what you think they do wrong in terms of, you know, how they portray stuff like friendships, for example?
Right. So the media, as we know, will always thrive on romantic and sexual tension. It's what makes money.
Yes.
But also, from the beginning of time, there's also very strong biological and evolutionary reasons why we exist and why we, you know, I can tell you, our nomadic ancestors displayed no evidence for the requirement of opposite-sex friendships. So there was no need for our primal ancestors to engage with each other than for survival, protection, and reproduction. So that's where we're hardwired in terms of where we're coming from. And then biologically, we're attuned to, you know, when we meet two people of the opposite sex, the interaction or the motivation for that sort of interaction is more a romantic interaction, that these two people will have some sort of interest. And moving into the future, it's either romantic or sexual. But now we've introduced a third, you know, a third parameter, and that's friendships. And Okay, but now we're all working together, you know, we're taking on the same jobs, you know, gender equality has played a massive part in platonic friendships. Mm-hmm. And so if we have to coexist with each other every day, then we have to understand each other. We have to be able to, you know, we have to be able to understand each other and communicate with each other to fully, you know, get the best of those relationships. Mm-hmm. So platonic friendships are now becoming a very, very big deal in terms of the landscape of how things are changing. And it is rated the fastest growing social interaction on the planet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's, you know, we're trying to keep up with all the complexities and we're trying to get ahead in terms of letting people know what's coming their way, preparing ourselves for the future, so to speak.
Do you think, I mean, that's fascinating. I mean, I was really intrigued by it. I was just listening. I became an audience member there. I was just like, yeah, that's really interesting. But no, it generally was like, and the thing that I find, you know, the byproduct of your answer is, I'm wondering, that implies to me that it's a really good thing that we're reaching this point, because, you know, does it imply that, you know, the gender equality is becoming better and better, and that the, you know, the opportunity to speak to the opposite sex is becoming more and more, you know, sort of pronounced in society. So we have to, you know, wouldn't it be better to have, you know, meaningful friendships and relationships with people and not necessarily have to be with them, if that makes sense? Is that, it implies mm-hmm. a really good, it implies we're in a really good situation, does it not?
Absolutely. So like you've said, gender roles are quickly changing, rapidly taking on new forms. And because of that, you know, we're trying to keep up in terms of how we can coexist and force things to be platonic. So platonic relationships, you know, as we spoke earlier, for two people of the opposite sex to come together, mm-hmm. you know, they can't 100% ever be sure that those both people want friendship at the beginning. There's always the inclination that somebody wants more than mm-hmm. that. But that's normal, because that's how we're, one, wired, to being taught to see the world, you know, through mm-hmm. same-sex relationships and romantic partnerships. Mm-hmm. And those two same-sex friendships and romantic partnerships, they have a very clear place in society, mm-hmm. a very structured social script, and one that we all know what the rules are, if that makes sense. We all know we start dating, we're exclusive, you know, we're not allowed to flirt. The rules are given, you know, we all understand it, and, you know, and we coexist in harmony with those rules. Mm-hmm. And then you start to have opposite sex friendships, and it starts to blur things a little bit mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, the intentions, the motivations, because it could be anything from a simple companionship all the way to friendly benefits.
Yeah.
And so we don't have clear social scripts. It's not something we're used to, mm-hmm. but it's something we have to get used to.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. As because I want to get onto the fact that I was fascinated by the fact that you said you did a fair amount of research into doing the book, because, you know, I think that's kind of an important role, is to kind of see, you know, how do other people feel about it. Mm-hmm. And so we'll get onto that shortly. But do you think there's a case of, like, because that was kind of when I first, you know, when you first came to me and said you've wrote this book, and my first inclination about platonic, you know, sort of friendships was that it was very, that I think that's the reason that some people feel fearful of ever getting into one, is because of that sort of implied knowledge of that it's going to end up being a complicated situation, or that mm-hmm. that it's different than being in a same sex relationship, because for the most part, I mean, obviously that leads on to sexual preference and everything else, but for the mm-hmm. most part, you kind of feel comfortable potentially with the knowledge of that it's not going to become a complicated physical relationship. Right. So do you think that's the reason, I guess, because in my opinion, I'm 29, so I kind of regard myself as, like, I kind of find that a bit of an old school approach, but do you think, like, kind of, it's sort of still around? Is that people are sort of a bit fearful of maybe what other people think if they sort of have, like, say, for example, I do get the occasional stigma because one of my best friends is a girl, and I get mm-hmm. the occasional view that that's weird because I'm mm-hmm. a guy. And so mm-hmm. I guess, but it doesn't bother me because, you know, I've known her 20 plus years, and so I'm like, who cares what they think? But do you get my point? Is that, do you think people are just sort of feeling, feel like, you know, I don't want to deal with the ramifications of what other people think, maybe?
Yeah. So there's a few things there. I think friends have been having platonic friends. You've touched on a few interesting and important points. So having friends of the opposite sex comes with its fair share of challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is the audience challenge, dealing with how people see you. And that includes even your own family and friends.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had platonic friends for all my life. I guess there was a natural part of my growing up. But having said that, there were times when my family or my friends thought, oh, I mean, you guys get on so well, you may as well start dating. Or, you know, you may as well move this further. And you yourself as a person have, you know, you have pressures from your family and friends to, like, question your own platonic relationship with your male or your opposite sex friends. So it does have its challenges. One is the audience challenge. Two is the romantic challenge. Like, you have to be prepared for more than just friends.
Mm-hmm.
Because feelings can come in at any point of the relationship. It might be at the beginning, it might be at the middle, it might be at any point, you know, people can start developing feelings. So romantic, handling the romantic challenge and an audience challenge is definitely prevalent in every single platonic friendship. But what I wanted to say is going back to when we were 3 years old, the word friendship enters our vocabulary at that point when we were three.
Ah, okay.
And we start to understand what do we do with other human beings. We start to develop and start building mental hierarchies in terms of what the world around us. And so when we're on the playground, we tend to go for people that look just like us.
Yeah.
And we tend to, you put kids in the playground and boys will play with boys and girls will play with girls naturally.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they will instinctively do. And so what happens then is until you get to college is where you start to interact a lot with your opposite sex friends. Because even in your teenage years, you know, friendship and romantic feelings are very confusing for a teenager. And they can't tell the difference. They're hormonal raging. They can't understand the differences or the feelings. And so, you know, platonic friendships are put harder for teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you go into, you know, into college or, you know, sort of a place of study where you come to, as you get more mature, sort of more wiser, you start to study with these people, spend lots of time with them in close proximity to them. And so platonic friendships start to begin, but true platonic friendships only begin when you become independent.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. So it's only to begin when you start to get jobs and you start to have you can start to make your own independent choices,
mm-hmm.
that they truly become a force, like in terms of now people can choose to be platonic. Whereas prior to that, they're all still trying to question how these two people are going to be working with each other. So, you know, I just want to say about talking about your question about, yes, it is our comfort zone for us to have same-sex friends.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also an almost social norm,
like
from childhood, that we get used to this and this is our comfort zone. And so we stick with what we know. And you're absolutely right. The challenges that present itself with platonic friendships, you know, people get scared of these challenges. But what I would like to say is that the benefits, you know, far outweigh those risks and the challenges that present itself.
No, as I said, speaking from someone in particular, I mean, I don't have many girl mates, but for those that I do, I cherish dearly, and because I firmly believe it leads to kind of a wider point in regards to friendship, that I think really the kind of the most crucial part is that you want to have friendship, like a diverse friendship circle. So that should include different genders, you know, so because you find, like, I always make this joke about if you go to, for example, a pub or a bar, I'm speaking just in case, like, Americans listened into this, so like a bar or pub or something like that, if you go with a bunch of guys, the conversation in general is going to be very male specific, whereas if you have a group of people with diverse interests and, you know, wide, you know, there's male and women represent there, like, there, is that you'll find that the conversation is way more diverse, which in my opinion is a better conversation. I totally get it. I mean, the thing that intrigued me, because I was actually thinking as you answering that you said about the word maturity, and that really intrigued me, because I'm wondering just in regards to, like, for the example, if you reach, because I think that really is, when you hit the nail on the head, is then I think it's the danger of that it may one day lead to one of them having feelings for the other person and then having to confront that. But my argument is always, and I'm intrigued to know whether this came up when you wrote the book, is that to me, I always said it's a level of maturity to realize that exists, and it's how you handle the person feeling that way. I kind of think a lot of the time people focus on the fact that someone feels that way and kind of punishes them for feeling that way when it kind of makes sense. You know, whereas wouldn't it be better to just sit down and say, I don't feel the same way. I want to be your friend, and then sort of like deal with it in a kind of respectful, mature way. Did you come across that?
Absolutely. And that's the basis of a really good platonic friendship. And that's the basis of any good friendship.
Yeah.
That your friends help you, to help each other through this. And, you're absolutely right that the person, you know, we shouldn't be, you know, we should be empathetic when someone is starting to have feelings for us and you don't feel the same way. And how brave they have to be to actually let you know that they have feelings for you, knowing that they're not entirely sure what the outcome of the conversation would be.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right in terms of being empathetic and being honest with this person, that you really value their friendship. You know, you do not want to, you know, you don't want to explore your feelings. You don't feel anything more for this person other than being friends. And you wish this would continue and you'd work on continuing this friendship. And giving your friend the space and the time to sort of reset his emotional dials or her emotional dials, if that's what they need. Because affairs of the heart are something sometimes very hard to deal with. It's very hard to deal with. So if your friend, you know, decides like, okay, you know, my friend's accepting, she's not punishing me for liking her, she's, you know, helping me through the situation, she's being very respectable about it, and maybe all I just need is to give it some time and let it all fizzle out.
Yeah.
And then think of all the benefits once you get back into the friendship. You know, you can go out with her friends, make new friends, you know, expand your circle, live a more meaningful life, I guess. Like you said, like, you know, it is largely dependent on being, you know, handling it with a large degree of maturity.
Yeah.
And pride. You know, we have to be able to say, let's put our egos aside. And you've touched on a very important point when it comes to friendships in general.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what most people don't think about when they engage in friendships is to think about, what is the other person getting out of this friendship?
Yeah.
Because ever so often we're thinking about what we can get out of the friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a friendship to be truly meaningful and rewarding, you know, it's about both people thinking about each other's needs.
Mm-hmm. Cause yeah, I was going to make the joke of, cause I was sort of laughing a little bit through that too, because I was thinking, I can imagine the audience going, oh, I'm just remembering all the times that I told my friend I liked them and then they just had a really bad reaction. Cause I was thinking of some situations I've been in where that's been the case. But that's just me joking about it. Because, yeah, I do think, like, it's just the case of that I just think of certain scenarios where, and I think this is the problem, is that they think, oh, if someone has a romantic feelings towards me, if it's a friend, an opposite friend, then we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But then when that happens, like I was saying earlier, it becomes the catalyst for, they want to talk about the fact that you have them feelings, as opposed to, like, I think your point was perfect, where it should be about what your friendship has done, however the many years that you've known them. And and so it leads me to the question I wanted to ask with, do you think there's an element of, and I'm wondering if your book addresses this, is that about the idea of sort of the friends first mentality, of that the friendship is the most important aspect of it, and if anything else comes out of it, then we'll discuss it, but as long as we remain friends, everything will be fine. I think if you have that sort of mantra, then it kind of is a good building block that whatever comes up, you can deal with. Is that something you've figured out?
I think that's a fair statement. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think when I, you know, in the book, it's all about, you know, setting up the right mindset. I spend a lot of time getting people mentally prepared to make opposite sex friends and remove anything that gets in the way of that. And being a woman, I know what gets in the way of making opposite sex friends. So I could write the book from a woman's perspective.
Yes.
But I think when you look at opposite sex friendships and when you're starting to make a friend, you're going to have to think about, you have to be honest with yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to understand the motivation for wanting to spend time with this person.
Yeah.
Because it is very hard sometimes to draw the line, because you could come home thinking, I'm going to arrange something else now. I'll invite him to come over and play, volleyball with my team, or come out for my friend's birthday drinks. But I think you have to be truly honest with yourself for your motivations for encouraging the person to want to hang out or mm-hmm. be around you. And ever so often, that's where it all starts.
Yeah.
And then you start to find, okay, he's not reciprocating, but reciprocating what? With friends, you don't create these, romantic mm-hmm. expectations. That's for couples, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's about removing the mindset of dating. So.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same playing field. Women share the same responsibility as men when it comes to initiating opposite sex friendships. We mm-hmm. all share that responsibility equally.
Yeah.
So we have rules for dating, and, I can speak for myself. You know, when we're dating, we have rules. When I'm at work, I have rules. We're wired. We like rules. We like social hierarchies. It's how we're wired to operate. And so we just need to, when we talk about friendships, we just need to remember that the rules of dating don't apply to the rules of friendship.
Yeah, that's such a, that sounds like really, really complicated, but it has a very simple premise. And like, I was just thinking of an example where, say, you have a platonic friend, and because I find, and I think you were sort of implying this example, is that if you invite the lone friend on their own to like your apartment or something, and mm-hmm. like that's kind of a scenario where people might go, ooh, like you misconstrue it as like maybe like a dating gesture of going, like if a person mm-hmm. goes, oh, I'm free after work, if you want to come and have some dinner with me at my apartment or something, and then a person mm-hmm. might mistake that for a romantic initiation, whereas your point is that if you can actually sit back and go, well, we've been friends for years, he probably just means that as a kind of, let's get together and catch up, and might as well do it at his house, at his flat, because it's private. But it's not mm-hmm. like, so yeah, I think as long as you understand you're in this, it's all about essentially being in the similar mindset, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think what you said there is also quite important, because unless two people have established that romance and sex is off the cards,
yes,
then they can start having a pure friendship,
mm-hmm.
and then they can, but when you start a platonic friendship, you don't know where the other person is, and you could, your intentions could be really platonic, but mm-hmm. you're never going to be sure no one can ever be sure what the other person is feeling
exactly,
at the beginning.
Yeah.
And so because of that, rule number one is to stick with group activities.
Mm-hmm.
Leave the coupley things for couples, and leave the coupley things when you've established that you guys have a pure friendship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. I think I think if you've known someone for a long time, the example I just described is less mm-hmm. is less dangerous than,
absolutely,
say if you did that within the first couple of weeks of knowing somebody. That's basically I generally think, in my experience, I'm not saying this as proof, but I generally think, in my experience, whenever you start platonic friendships, is that if you I've seen people make that mistake where they go, oh, let's mm-hmm. talk, let's go somewhere, but just the two of us, like. Mm-hmm. That's easily can be misconstrued, whereas to your point, it's saying it's much easier to kind of go, let's go to this person's house party where loads of people will be, or whatever it may be, because if you're basically saying you only ever want to spend time with that person, then you may be indicating there's more feelings there than you're willing to admit.
Absolutely. I think the biggest challenge is, when it comes to burdens of opposite sex friendship.
Yes.
Women would say the biggest burden is sort of managing the friendship part of the relationship, and trying to keep, any sexual interactions or interferences at bay.
Mm-hmm.
And for guys, the biggest challenge for them is when it comes to opposite sex friendships, when they genuinely want a platonic friendship, the biggest challenge for them is women tend to see them sort of like dating partners.
Yes.
So I've had guys tell me, lots of guys tell me, like, I really want to make friends, and I really want to be her friend and her friends. And it's all going well, and we're doing group stuff. And then suddenly, all the group stuff now moves to coupley things. Suddenly, we want to go for sunset walks and romantic picnics, and it's becoming more and more frequent, and it's putting me off the situation.
Yeah.
So it is about maintaining pace. Slow and steady wins the race.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. I think you could apply that to quite a lot of, just life situations, really.
I personally believe in that, so,
you
gotta have a lot of patience, and you have to be patient with other people.
No, totally. And like I think, I mean, this just, as I said, this applies to a number of different situations, but you said this earlier about, I'm a firm believer in being honest from like sort of day one, because mm-hmm. I think if you have ulterior motives, then that can make a platonic friendship like difficult to maintain, mm-hmm. because you have other reasons for things happening. And so, if you're just honest from the beginning and say, you know, cause I think some people make that mistake, is that they put themselves in a platonic friendship when they mm-hmm. realize that actually they want more, but they're thinking, if I do it this way, that'll mm-hmm. get that. And that's not necessarily, I think, a fair reflection on the other person if you're kind of going, let's be friends first. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, let's hope this is something more soon. Like,
You're right. Yeah. So, and I agree with you. It's one of the motivations for initiating opposite sex friendships
yes.
is the possibility or the development of something more. Mm-hmm. And we need to remove that element. We should go in with a pure platonic, genuine companionship agenda. Mm-hmm. And if things develop over time, it's nothing to be too hard on yourself or the other person, mm-hmm. because that's natural too. Mm-hmm. You know, that's natural to start developing feelings with somebody.
Especially if you like them and you're spending time with them. I mean, like, that's not. Yeah, it's not. I agree with you. I think some people get very beat themselves up by the fact that they've reached that point. Whereas, you know, it seems to me quite logical if you're, you know, especially if you'd known them quite a while
yeah.
and then you get on with them really well and you spend time and you're comfortable with them. It's not beyond the realm of possibility. I've heard stories of people who have been high school friends that I knew, you know, because I guess mm-hmm. the avenue of Facebook, and then you find out 12 years later that they realize that they've really liked each other for a long time and got together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, it's not unheard of to kind of just suddenly go, this person's really awesome and I'd like to actually be with them. So,
I think, you know, the one thing when we talk about friendships, it's no different from any other relationship.
Yeah.
You know, they have their own dynamic. And as long as we sort of respect the dynamic and nurture that relationship, then you can have a fairly rewarding friendship.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you said earlier about being open and honest and not being hard on yourself, because, you know, affairs of the heart are very hard to rationalize.
Yes,
you don't really
true.
Have to have logic and reason to start to feel this way or to end feels, you know, to end those feelings. Just go with the flow and treat it like everything else you treat in life, because friends, you know, you'll have people that you will happily reject, and then you'll meet people that will reject you. So in the end, it's all fair play, right?
Yeah. It'll balance itself out, yeah. No,
it balances itself out.
No, I agree with that completely. No, that makes a great deal of sense. I'm intrigued by, and you touched on this just a little while ago, in doing the sort of, I guess, research and prep for your book, did you go into did you look into the difference between what a male thinks about platonic friendships and what women do? And if so, what were the differences that you found?
Yeah, so I did go into the both sexes, and there's a chapter in my book called The Single Guy's Point of View.
Okay.
And how they see female friendships.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of that was to give females insight into the male mind, like what,
okay.
how men are seeing this friendship from their shell.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the, you know, the big pointers, when I go into a lot of detail into, that's the secret, right, is the understanding the opposite sex. So studying from a sort of a personal experience point of view and from a scientific point of view,
mm-hmm.
it was important to understand how men were thinking and behaving and how we could use that to build opposite sex friendships on.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I mean, I can go through some of those things. I mean,
yeah, sure. I'm generally quite interested.
Okay. So, I mean, the big things would be like when you're meeting guys for the first time is to, you know, sort of be friendly but not flirty. But for a guy, it's very hard to distinguish between friendliness and flirtiness when he first meets someone of the opposite sex.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy to misinterpret those two. So mm-hmm. you've always got to send the right signals to avoid any ambiguity with your intentions.
Yeah.
And, you know, you should avoid any flirty gestures and any talks that moves beyond the boundaries of the friendship. And focus your conversations on, this is a really big tip for, you know, for your female listeners, focus your conversations on non-emotional stuff. Talking about your feelings is something that girls typically do.
Yes.
Right? Guys do not discuss their emotions or personal thoughts with other guys often, if at all.
Yeah.
And so although having a platonic female friend may give him a chance to do so, it's usually the exception and not the rule. So sharing feelings, talking about past romances, dating escapades, you know, establishes intimacy.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to maintain romantic indifference with someone you feel really gets you.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, totally. That makes a great deal of sense. And I think that's in my opinion, when this subject matter comes up, I think that's, to me, I think is the number one problem, is that it's really, really difficult to, if you have, you know, I'm thinking of some of my closest friends who are women, is that I do think, you know, I think it's okay for me to admit, I mean, a lot of them are married, so I think it's totally fine. but you know, you have situations where you kind of go, you know, maybe it would work if I, but then, wouldn't it be great or something? You get into this sort of optimistic view of like, wouldn't it be great if it worked out between us? But then you kind of go, my go-to, backdrop is I turn around and say, well, but our friendship's been so wonderful and I can't imagine my life not having them around. And so you can't, and I think it leads to a wider point as well. Do you think people kind of misconstrue, you know, sort of misconstrue what that feelings by just the fact that they do have a rapport with somebody? Is they kind of sort of think, you know, wouldn't it be nice if I had that feeling and kind of push it rather than actually feeling it, if you see what I mean?
Yeah, and that's the danger.
Yes.
Because just because we get on with someone doesn't mean we're meant to be soulmates. And, you know, friendship is a form of, it's a deep connection. It's a form of love. But just because we feel so strongly for someone doesn't mean we have to be soulmates or lovers or something more. And I think the important thing to understand is, you know, being a friend with someone, you have a different set of expectations compared to you when you see this person as a partner.
Yes.
There are two different expectations, and it's easy to say, oh, you see someone in friend mode, so they're going to be a great partner. Not entirely true. People take on different personalities when they're in a relationship and when they're a friend.
I agree. You know, I agree wholeheartedly. That's a great point.
And you're absolutely right. It is a bit of a trap. So I think you've touched on this earlier, where when it comes to, running a platonic friendship, self-control, especially for guys, is a big thing. And like what you stated earlier, I mean, attraction is something no one has control of. You can't say you cannot be attracted to someone. We just are attracted to people. And if we are physically attracted to them, then attraction we can't control, but acting on it we can.
But I often say to people, like, because I say it, I'm sure there'll be some of my you know, girl mates are going to listen to this, is that I just basically turn around and say, well, and I generally mean this when I go, I'm fortunate in a way. I remember, to give an actual example of, I remember, Stephen Fry said this point, which I think is really quite key, because being that he's gay, is he said a very good, I remember seeing a documentary about him when he first met Hugh Laurie, who's his best friend, who did a bunch of stuff with, and he turned around and said in this documentary, which I found fascinating, which made a great deal of sense to me, where he says, you know, I had every indication that I should be in love with him more than just friends, in that I've been his friend since 18. He was absolutely gorgeous and he was wanted by everybody. Everything should indicate that I'm like that. And he said, but in a way, I'm extremely grateful that I never had that feeling the entire time that I've known him, because it has led to one of the strongest friendships I've ever had. And so I'm kind of like, so I often say, and I don't, you know, because you can get criticized for this to a certain extent, is I often go, you know, my friends are beautiful in their own way, and, you know, they're very nice to look at and various other things, but I've never felt anything beyond that. And I guess it was going back to the question I said earlier, is that I think some people kind of misconstrue that and go, you know, oh, they're good looking, you get on well with them, you find them pleasant to be around. But it's not understanding that there's this, I call it like this, essentially chemistry. It's this thing you can't bottle. the extra it factor that makes it into a relationship that I think sometimes people, because they're friends, go, they kind of think, oh, it's okay, that'll come in time. And so I think there are situations where I think some friendships turn into romance when necessarily they shouldn't. And I'm just intrigued to know if did you come across that?
I think the secret. So friends.
Does this cost anything, the secret? Maybe a copy of the book.
Another review.
Yeah, okay.
So friends who become lovers will have to establish if they have physical intimacy and sexual attraction with each other.
Mm-hmm.
If it's possible to have sexual attraction with this person that I'm friends with, they'll have to establish that.
Yes.
And people who start to date before they become, who start to date before they were even friends, just two people who start to meet and date, will have to establish, their friendship chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
So you need both sexual chemistry and friendship chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And so two people who start to date, if they don't have friendship chemistry, then their relationship is going to be
one-dimensional,
tested.
Yeah. It'd be one-dimensional to a certain extent, yeah.
Yeah, it will be tested consistently throughout that relationship.
Yes.
So couples who work on friendship within their relationship are, I even read a quote the other day.
Mm-hmm.
No relationship needs friendship more than a relationship.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, so friends who become lovers will have to establish if they have sexual attraction for each other and need to build sexual chemistry, because after you've been friends with someone for so long, it's hard to start seeing them in a sexual way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I guess the point I'm making, because I think this is kind of key, is that if you don't have that, or at least you don't have it for a long period of time, I'm just saying, from my point of view, for knowing some people a long time, is that I think that's really, really useful, and it certainly makes a platonic friendship easier, knowing that, like, that you don't have them feelings, therefore it's not...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think there are very definite scientific reasons why people will remain platonic, and one of them is one of the two people don't feel attracted to the other person.
Yes.
So if you're not attracted, then it's an easy friendship to pursue.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And I think that's kind of a really good point. There was another thing I was thinking in relation to, because as someone who has dated in their lifetime, I'm intrigued by the notion of, I'm wondering whether, because I've noticed this, I guess, because I dated when I was at university, I've been dating recently, and I'm intrigued by the idea of wondering if this, you came across with this, that maybe this is an extra avenue for platonic friendships to develop, is that I see more and more, which I am really pleased to see, is that women are much more upfront about declaring whether they like somebody, and that never used to kind of be, it used to kind of almost be like a stereotype, is that the guy must initiate, you know, the first going out, like saying that they like somebody, and that they'd have to declare whether, do you see what I mean? So
I
find it, yeah, exactly, yeah. And so, I mean, as romantic as that is, it's like, it's also useful to say, and I think, you know, it makes the argument about equality even stronger, is that it would be nice that, like, that we just had this sort of idea that it's okay, whoever says it, to kind of go, I really, really like you, and I'd like to go on a date with you, or something like that, because that's much more, like, upfront, and leads to less misunderstanding. Because I think guys, I'm speaking from a guy's point of view, and in my experience, is that I think platonic friendships fall down if that's the goal, because a guy kind of, it feels that he must sort of, like, I guess it's sort of this Hollywood, the way Hollywood perceives relationships end up, that a guy, I remember hearing this on a radio show once, and I giggled because it's so true, is that Hollywood films have this rather unrealistic notion of that you should pester the girl until she submits into going out with you. And if you look at any, you know, really good, especially in the 90s, which is like when I was growing up, there was a lot of romantic comedies where that was the notion of the just pester and pester the girl until she relents. So I'm just intrigued to know whether you agree with the notion of that women are a lot more open-minded about saying, I like you, would you like to go out with me? And sort of more upfront about their actual romantic feelings. That it leads to that if they say that up front, and maybe it could be the opposite of saying, you know, I don't have any romantic feelings, but I'd like to maybe develop a friendship with you, that it might make platonic friendships more likely to happen. Does that make sense?
I think you're absolutely right. I think this is an empowered woman to say, I can have choices too.
Yes.
You know, I can make this choice of just being this guy's friend platonically and not wanting to go to bed thinking, does he need to have my babies? Is he going to marry me? You know, I can go to bed thinking he's just a friend and he's a guy.
Yes.
That's it. End of story. You know? And I think as women, you know, become or feel more empowered and independent, and we live in an age where we are. And, you know, it's good that women are taking the same positions or empowerment as men are in terms of, like, being upfront with their feelings. And I think it's also nice to be upfront because guys sometimes miss it when girls start to like them.
Yes.
They don't even know that the girl's making moves on them. So,
yeah.
You know, if you're I think girls can spot changes in men very quickly. So if your guy friend is acting or sort of trying to be romantic or flirty, she'll pick it up quite quickly. Mm-hmm. Guys, on the other hand, if you're trying to figure out whether he's interested in you and you're in platonic friendship, you might miss the signs.
Yes.
That you're flirting with him. So you do want to be open and honest and upfront with the situation. Lay all your cards on the table. This is how you feel. He's going to, you know, if he's a good friend, he's going to love and respect you for that. And despite what the outcome is, and, you know, you'll be able to deal with it.
Yeah, I had one. I actually can say this as an example. I'm no longer friends with this particular person just because of we fell out of contact. But I remember there was a situation a few years ago with me, and I guess I'm just saying this for the benefit of people listening, as this is a good example of, I think, the best way of dealing with the situation. Because a friend of mine, we went to a gig together, and we'd been knowing each other for a long time, and she suddenly, you know, started flirting with me on this particular night, and I was quite shocked by it, and I didn't necessarily react in a bad way, but I just mm-hmm. didn't reciprocate, and I felt really bad about it, and she sort of went home feeling a little bit embarrassed. Mm. So my sort of solution, because I felt awful about the situation, I was like, well, I don't really, you know, I was confused by the situation and I didn't really know how to handle it because it was quite new for me. And so I kind of just, I thought I did what turned out, I think, at the time, because we did end up being friends for a couple of years after that, was that I actually sort of rang her the next day and just said, you know, I think we need to talk about what happened yesterday. And I went around to her house and just said, here's how I feel. I don't feel the same way, and I hope you don't take that as a rejection. I was just completely, like, a rejection as in, you've ruined what we've got or anything like that. And so I just explained kind of very calmly, and I guess it goes back to what I said earlier about if a friend declares feelings that you don't expect, it's very easy to kind of go, you know, how dare you? How dare you have feelings? You're ruining what made it so special. Whereas I think the way I did it was quite respectful, and I kind of just, you know, sitting down and saying, look, I don't feel the same way, but I'm willing to help you, you know, not feel that way, but, because it's not going to lead to anything, but it doesn't mean that we're not going to still be friends about it. And I hope I dealt with it as best I could.
And I think that's a really mature way of dealing with it. And
yes.
A very productive way of dealing with it.
Yes.
Because, you know, both people's feelings are on the table and you're being open and honest with her, and she's getting to see there's no hidden agendas, and you're giving her the space to recover or to reset how she's feeling about things with you. And, you know, because she knows she has the space to do that, you know, people can recover. And one of the things I would also say on that note,
okay,
if you start developing feelings for a friend, the situation can very, very easily change back. And we underestimate the potential that we have to move feelings out of the way and move everything back to platonic friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why friends who start to feel something for each other struggle to realign the friendship.
Yes.
But it's not that hard, because if former romantic partners can move to being friends, you know, ex-partners will now stay friends with each other, then friends who develop feelings for each other can also move back to being friends.
We should never underestimate
the potential of doing that.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. Yeah, I never thought about, you know, a situation where you end up, you know, if you've got a child with somebody and you're, you know, your ex-husband or ex-partner and is the father of your child, like, you'd want to, in that scenario, you'd want to continue the platonic friendship, but the relationship is over. So if that's possible, or like that's a goal you would want in that scenario, why can't it be possible in other situations? I think that's a really good sort of comparison to go, in that situation you'd want it to happen. So yeah, you'd like to think we'd have the potential to be able to go, you know, we'll deal with it as it happens, and then hopefully we'll go back to the way it was. Yeah, I think that's a really good way of looking at it. Yeah. So I want to ask, because there was one of the things that you've touched on this in a couple of the questions I've thrown at you, is that your sort of upbringing and how that kind of helped you in terms of developing platonic friendships yourself. And I'm just intrigued to ask you about that, because according to your website, and I guess you can sort of tell that you have somewhat of an accent. Are you from South Africa?
I am from South Africa. Great. Yes, I was born and raised in South Africa.
Whereabouts?
In Durban.
Okay. And so how long were you there for?
So I immigrated to the UK in 2006. Okay. So I've been living in the UK for 7 to 10 years solidly.
Okay. And what made you decide to move?
It's because when I came in 2006 for expat assignment, working as a young engineer in training, I liked it so much. I came back when I was 30 to explore the world and travel from London. So London was a great place. It was vibey and energetic. And it was a great time to live in a different country and, you know, and start to, you know, and start to build myself.
And I guess, like, because I guess it's just a sort of semi-cheeky question, but I'm just intrigued by the notion of, like, what was your first view of us English folk when you came here?
You know, I must say, initially when I first came here, I felt it quite strange that people did not interact with each other very often. It was like something was missing in my world. It wasn't so easy, and it was very orchestrated. You had to have a very definite reason why you're making interaction with somebody. You couldn't do, you know, you couldn't just make casual small talk. Like, people were not too fond of that random casual small talk. And in my community and in my life experiences, that was my whole world.
No.
You know, both of these, you know, lots of casual hellos and small talks all around the corner. So it was quite different. But I must say, I've made a lot of friends in England, and it is really a mindset. It is really about taking the best of the culture that's here, bringing what you think is best for yourself, combining the two and making it work.
No, I totally agree, and like I often say, like, you know, I guess the sort of English stereotypes. I was thinking of a joke there when you said that. Speaking of, I mentioned Hugh Laurie. I remember he once I saw an interview about this yesterday where I saw him talking about being English, and he goes, "I wouldn't recommend going to England because fun is outlawed." And I was just like, it made me giggle when he said that. I was thinking that's quite funny, but you're basically making the point of that. Because he said, he's basically making the point of, which I always find interesting whenever you talk about celebrities, is that especially if someone does a very sort of an extroverted, you know, job, is that it's very interesting when you find actually personality-wise they're quite introverted. And he was basically making that point of that outside of the jobs he does as an actor, he's a very sort of quiet, thinkful, introverted person. But you often find that can be the case because it's their outlet to kind of express themselves. But so your point about a mindset, I totally agree with, because I'm from Newcastle, which is the northeast of England, and it's kind of obviously a working class part of the country, and it's sort of a little bit of both, in that you get people who don't sort of socialize, but especially if you're from like a working class area though, you very often find that families do want to talk to each other, and that's kind of their social norm, and it leads to a community, as in people wanting to talk to each other and know what's going on. And like, to give you an example about my mom, who my mom like knows everybody. Like, you know, if I ever go out on a walk with her in somewhere in Newcastle, she'd be stopped by someone who's like, "Oh, hello, how's it going?" Like, and I'm like, "Who? I don't know these people." It's always a different person each time, and I don't know any of them. But to me, I like that because it implies a sort of good social interaction that I think is kind of imperative to live a happy life to a certain extent, and so it goes back to sort of to elaborate that in terms of platonic friendships, is that, like, because I think we touched on this right at the beginning, was that, do you think also that the avenue of that, you know, that going to work is a lot more like, you know, the level of men and women is sort of getting more equal, as they say. And so the opportunity, you might find yourself in a team where, you know, you've got women to talk to and to, so it can lead to developing them skills for like sort of platonic friendships now, like the opportunities are more freely accessible. Is that a fair point to say?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I talk about forging friendships at work as an entire chapter in the book.
Yes.
It's a great place to explore opposite sex, you know, guys and women in their personalities and how they operate, how they think and how they work. And I would say for sure, you know, you've got so much opportunities to interact with the opposite sex. Why would you want to limit yourself to same-sex friends? You just ruled out half the planet.
Well, that's half the population you're basically ruling out.
Absolutely. You've just thrown off and said, you know what? And then, you know, everywhere, you don't have to go special places to be guys. Guys are everywhere.
Yeah.
Or girls. Hmm. So, and work is a great place to experiment with that.
Yeah.
It's a great place to understand our women are thinking or men are thinking. You know, there's the office open areas. There's, you know, going to work socials. Inviting, you know, playing sports with people outside work.
Yeah,
it's a
exactly,
great place
yeah.
to explore that option. You have so much of common interest and activities to do and talk about and, you know, work colleagues. You might even report to the same boss.
Mm-hmm.
Easy stuff when you're trying to develop a friendship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think one of the best points you've made in this is that the idea that you don't necessarily get the tools you need in order to do a friendship with the opposite sex because of the fact that we're brought up to, well, or just it's our human, I guess, human instinct when we're younger, is to, you know, crow. Because I was thinking when you said about school, and I never thought about this, and I'm quite a thoughtful person, I think about this stuff all the time. But then when you said it's school, like, you know, yeah, it does become a congregation of that guys hang out with guys, girls hang out with girls. And it's only really when you get to sort of college, maybe first year of university, that you start intermingling. And that was when I kind of, in terms of the way I am as a person, sort of developed, because I always felt that I was that type of person, but never got very much opportunity to kind of explore that. Whereas at university, them sort of boundaries sort of just completely disappear, and it makes it a much more enjoyable experience. So I thought that was a really good point you made, because I think that's kind of, in my experience, I think that's true. But there you go. I wanted to also touch on, because we talked about you being growing up, is that it says on your profile on your site that you had two brothers, and I'm just interested to know, how do you think that helped you in terms of, you know, developing your own friendships later in life, you know, male friendships, like how did that help?
Yeah, I think you know, my two brothers are my first two friends, and we were literally, you know, 2 years apart from each other, and so we went to school together, about, you know, primary and secondary school, which is the terms we would use in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked up to my brothers a lot. So I did, interact with them so much, not realizing that subconsciously I am starting to think like a guy too.
Mm-hmm.
But still very feminine, mm-hmm. still very traditionally girl, I would call myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they would have their guy friends come over, and I used to interact with their guy friends the way they would interact with their own friends, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was just the expectation that these are people that are my brother's friends, and, you know, it's only when I became a teenager and, you know, you start to distinguish between romantic feelings and friendship, you start to get slightly confused about who's doing what and what their intentions are.
Yeah.
But I was much better equipped, I would say, in terms of, from that experience of being around my brothers and developing a mindset that, being able to understand how guys think and operate and what the responses were,
mm-hmm.
and how to phrase my questions so that I got quick answers from my brothers. You know, mm-hmm. as kids, you can learn anything.
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly. And even then I moved on to a career, which was, filled with, you know, heavily male dominated, which is chemical engineering.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that. That's very interesting. Cause I assumed, like, it implies that you would have to sort of conform to a very sort of male, like, you know, as we touched on earlier, like male conversation, mm-hmm. or maybe you were sort of not necessarily, Maybe because of the environment, not allowed to sort of express yourself as a woman or something. I guess that's the sort of stereotype you expect. So I'm intrigued to let you talk about it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, men are perceived to be solution orientated, yes, and women are perceived to be more process orientated.
Yes.
But when you can have both skills, then you can choose which one you want whenever the situation calls for it.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of opposite sex friendships.
Yeah.
You can have both, and both are equally meaningful and equally productive for your lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I developed a lot of the solution oriented skills from a young age from my brothers and my dad. And wanted to choose a career that was very focused on rational thinking and logic,
mm-hmm,
was natural, and I enjoyed it tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember watching my brothers spending a lot of time doing mathematics,
mm-hmm,
because they loved it. But because they loved it, I spent a lot of time around them, and I started to like the subject.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I may subtly got influenced by things that they were doing, if that, yeah, made sense.
No, not at all.
And I didn't really have any sisters, so, you know, that may have been different, but that influenced my life in many ways, unconsciously and subconsciously. It has led me to a whole new path. But I also want to encourage people at this point that although I've developed these skills, and when I studied platonic friendships, working with some of the greatest social scientists on the planet, literally, it's these skills, like anything else in life, can be learned. You know, you can learn how to play guitar. You can learn how to make opposite sex friends.
Mm-hmm. No, not totally. In essence, about sort of describing your book in a more generalistic sense, because we have been quite specific, is does it discuss how to become better at that, or is your book more a case of, like, you know, sort of describing how platonic friendships are and then sort of making up your own mind, or like how I guess is, like, I guess I'm sort of seeing like the syntax, mm-hmm, or how you decided to approach it.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, very, very logical way of going through the book. I mean, the book starts with, it's built to help women initiate male friendships and sustain them for the long term. So, mm-hmm, it is packed with step-by-step guides, practical how-tos, actual tips, actual conversations, real experiences. And it tells you exactly what to do to start a friendship, maintain it, what happens when you start developing feelings, how to deal with the friendship when there's a partner in the picture, how to deal with jealous partners. So it gives you all the tools you need to have long-term meaningful opposite sex friendships.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is supported by understanding the dynamics of friendship, what, yes, happened in the playground,
mm-hmm,
and it's supported by science.
Mm-hmm.
So then we can understand why sometimes we just can't sleep with our friends because, you know, biologically it's hard for us to do that as a woman. And
yeah,
there's reasons for that.
I was going to ask you because it feels like the sort of elephant in the room. I mean, there was even a film called Friends with Benefits, which I remember. Based on your research, because I've always wondered this, because I've never been in a situation where Friends with Benefits has been a thing, but I'm intrigued to know, like, have you found within any of your research that do you in general think that Friends with Benefits is a good idea? Because I often find whenever that sort of stuff comes up is it's usually one of the participants not admitting that they feel something more and is willing to just accept somewhere, mm-hmm, in the middle. And I'm just intrigued to know, am I being a little judgmental or is it, in your opinion, can it be possible?
Right, so Friends with Benefits was a big part of my study in terms of when I wrote the book. So there's a lot of scientific evidence to say, you know, can it work, can it not work? And we use the research and material from various studies and surveys and talking with undergraduate students. And this is decades of work talking about sleeping with friends,
mm-hmm,
and the advantages, disadvantages, writing rules book and where to from here. And basically, the research for Friends with Benefits is simple. It's to understand the reasons why we get into a Friends with Benefits relationship. Once we understand that, which most people don't know when they get into a Friends with Benefits relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
But if two people know exactly what they want, that's two friends having physical intimacy with each other, knowing that they're friends, but they've got a lot more at stake because they probably have mutual friends, they have a history together. There's a lot more at stake when you get into this. And initially, it all sounds rather fun and intriguing and adventurous. But sooner or later, one of them, more likely the woman, is going to want more than that.
Yes.
No one wants to be in a commitmentless relationship forever.
Yeah. Yeah, which is why I just think it is like kind of painting over the cracks, as you were. And yeah, in fairness to what you just said, I think probably that sounds true. And in any example I've heard about where people have done that, is that very often I do think it's a case of they're not 100% sure what they're getting into, and that I don't think they actually know what they're feeling, whether they actually do want more or whatnot. So they kind of go, well, we've ended up in this situation, not really spent any time sort of processing, how do I feel about this person? Do I want to do this or whatever it is? And it kind of just happens. So yeah, it's interesting because yeah, I do think that's true. But
yeah, so in my book, I mean, I've got the entire checklist about how you can have a successful friends and benefits relationship.
Okay.
I talk a lot about why it doesn't work, like in terms of why people are not prepared, but there are rules. And if you play by those rules, sort of communication rules, you know, rules of, you know, who we're flirting with, what people know in privacy settings. And it's a very, you know, it's a very orchestrated list of rules.
All right.
And then people start to gather just by looking at that this is more than they bargained for, like in terms of there's more effort than it's rewarding.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is possible, although it's quite rare for it to be possible where two people can have friends with benefits, yet at the same time not undermine their friendship.
Yes. Yeah, and I think what you're hitting on, are you referring to like sort of examples of like if they can, a person might end up getting jealous, and so even on some level it is committed in the terms of that they might get jealous if like, because usually friends with benefits implies that they can sleep with other people, and so yeah, it's just I often think that's, in my opinion, what I think leads to it eventually becoming complicated.
Absolutely, because yeah. Sometimes we try to fight this, but. You know, even if we agree to sleep with someone only for physical intimacy.
Yes.
There is bound to be feelings of rejection when this person starts to one, sleep with other people, or two, move into a relationship.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think that's the reason that's kind of, as you said, a dangerous thing to actually do, because it'll lead to something more relevant eventually. That's fascinating. I generally have like been interested in terms of like the research behind it, whether they think it's so thank you for saying that. I guess like, so I think that's a really good you know, sort of wrap up, because we got back onto the book and sort of the how you decided to write it. I guess like one of the things I never asked you, I guess sort of in terms of wrapping this up, is to say what inspired you to write it in the first place. Was it people coming to you? Was it just what you felt? Did you feel, you did mention until you wrote it, it's no book's ever been done about this. Was that part of it as well?
So friendships have always been a big part of my life. Mm-hmm. So for some reason, they came naturally to me, and
yes.
Not just opposite sex friendships, it's same sex as well. So I found it quite easy to network and connect with people.
Mm-hmm.
But as I grew, you know, went into my late 20s, early 30s, I found that, you know, for the last decade, my girlfriends continuously would ask me, oh, it's so nice that you can have guy friends. And what started off as pub conversations about how do you make guys as friends? And it's so nice that you have them and they respect you and they don't want to sleep with you. How do you build that? How do you draw the line? Because a lot of them struggled with that. Things got in the way of them making friends. And then I used to give them tips about, oh, maybe say this or maybe don't do this. But then they said, well, you know, we need more than just that. And so I took this as an opportunity to send a message to the world, like a platform to say how we can make male friends and why this is important for us and why this is, you know, this is a real thing and this can happen. So the book became a project. And when I got involved with the project itself, I wanted it because being a scientist myself, I wanted it to have scientific elements to either prove or disprove some of thinkings and opinions and judgments and stereotypes. And so I worked with some of the leading professors, social scientists in the world to develop the material. So they shared, you know, tons of years of research material with me, which I studied. And it was a very, you know, interesting exercise for me in terms of sharing my own personal experiences, my exposures, and then combining that with social science to back it up and provide people with a genuine, solid guideline to making friends.
Mm-hmm. Do you think as well, there's a couple of quick questions I forgot to ask you, is like, I guess this would make sense to ask you in terms of the book, is that I'm assuming by the fact that you wrote that you have male friends and you consider, you know, a male friendship important to you personally. Is that fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's probably, you know, because women told me constantly, or my girlfriend said, you have so many male friends and how is it you can walk in and you can quickly decide that you want to date him or flirt with him and be his friend. You know, how do you make that decision? How do you manage that? So, yeah, and male friends are equally important in my life as my female friends are.
Yeah, because I think it would be so, like, that would be so ironic, is that you wrote a book about platonic friendships and go, but I have no male friends. I hate them. Like, I just think that would be funny. I mean, I assumed that, but it was kind of like, I know it's a very obvious question, but I just thought it would be funny if you just went, well, actually.
It's all the research.
Yeah.
It's the research. But that would have been quite funny. But, yeah. Yeah. That, in a way, that's why I can stand by the book. It's
yes.
Because, you know, I may not be entirely sure because I haven't gone through every single article on the planet, but the book is what I did and why I believe successful friendships and how they work.
Yeah.
So it really is straight from the horse's mouth,
mm-hmm.
and how I got my friendships to work.
Yeah, I think absolutely, and I think that's a good summary. I also wanted to ask because I think to me this is I think the biggest difference in my lifetime in terms of friendships being more possible in the sense we're talking about is that do you think sort of society in general? I know we said mainstream media portrays it quite quite misleading in terms of how to portray what friendship should be. But I think it, you know, in my experience of having friends who, you know, have same sex, opposite sex and, you know, people I meet, you know, doing this and various other things is I think we're reaching a point in society where guys like myself, because I consider myself a very emotional person, is that we're no longer constrained by the notion that a guy is all about is sex driven, non-emotional, can't handle, you know, talking about his feelings, and a woman is very, you know, not about sex, very emotional, like would only sleep with someone if they have an emotional connection. I just find them very sort of loosely irrelevant terms, in that surely it would make sense that us as human beings are like, we're a little bit of everything of those things, and it shouldn't be gendrified in that way. And so I just think that's kind of getting way better than it's ever been, is that, you know, guys are allowed to express themselves emotionally. Women are slowly getting to a point where, which is a relief because I understand why women don't. There's a wider point about, you know, the way they're treated sometimes. But, you know, I am pleased to say women are very much more open about talking about sex because that obviously wasn't possible, you know, especially, you know, if you go back in history. So I guess, like, the final question I wanted to ask you is, do you think that's getting easier from a male point of view and from a woman's?
Oh, absolutely. It's about understanding that both sexes need each other.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an entire chapter of why we need men, and there's another chapter about why men need us.
Yes.
So it talks about some of the points you've mentioned, and I think because if we understand we need each other, then we make it easy for each other.
Yeah. That's a really
and
nice.
So, yeah, and it becomes, you know, the more rewarding lives we can lead because friendships, you know, has been proven to add people lead a more happy, fulfilled and rewarding lives because of the people around them.
So it's pleasing to know that you're not someone who just believes males are only there to procreate.
I'm even empathetic to that cause because
yes.
They need that to keep the human species going.
Yes.
And we need that for survival. So
yes.
Sometimes I'm even like, you know, it's okay to feel that way.
Well, yeah, it's just nice to know that, like, you dedicated a chapter to realizing that men are relevant and just as important, because sometimes, like, I'm really pleased in terms of doing this, because I think it's going to be a podcast where people can listen to it and go, you know, we all have value. I think that's kind of the real sort of general mm-hmm. positiveness about it, is I've really enjoyed it in the sense of that it realizes that, like, we can be, you know, better with each other, and we can communicate better, and we can understand each other more, and we shouldn't be defined so much by our gender, even though it's important and biological, but you know, biologically we can't do anything about it because we are who we are, but
It's just nice that we have the opportunity.
I think, you know, I just want to add to that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Friendships,
yeah.
Friendships are one of the most underrated blessings we will have in our lives.
I totally agree.
Value of our friendships we will only truly understand decades down the line.
Yes.
And they take time to invest in, and they take, you know, they take time and energy, but it could be one of your best investments yet.
Do you agree with the notion, because I say this all the time, and I think you're considered an expert, I guess. Do you agree with the premise that a relationship is only a good one if you've had difficulties with it? Like, as in, you know, I say that because, like, if I talk about my school friends, because I'm fortunate, I think the word fortunate applies. It's a really, I think your word was spot on, is that I feel really blessed and fortunate that some of my school friends I'm still very, very close with, and they're sort of like brothers to me. Like, I really, you know, love them dearly. And, but I often say to people that if they go, like, what's the secret to having a relationship, friendship that's lasted, 20 plus years? And I go, the ability to have a fight with them and have disagreements with them, and at the end of the day go, sit down and go, okay, how do we fix it? How do we get back to the friendship being good? Because I think some people kind of just expect a 20 plus year old relationship to friendship to be like, oh, it was all plain sailing and we got on famously. And like, do you see my point? Is that I get very puzzled when some people go and I say, some of my best friends I've had the worst fights with in terms of the worst misunderstandings. But in a way, the reason you have fights of that nature is because it means more. So you want it to kind of keep going. And so it has a very emotional punch to it. But as long as you're willing to sit down and say, you know, why did we do that? Why was that misunderstanding happening? Why did this girl get in between us? Or, you know, there's all sorts of stuff. I was thinking of that one example, is that one of my friends years ago, we almost like fell out over a girl, and then we just suddenly went, what's the point? Like, you know?
Yeah, you still have each other.
Yeah. We actually reached the point where we were like, is she really worth all this hassle? And we were like, no. And then we kind of just got over it. And so anyway, but do you agree with do you give me my point?
I do agree with that. I think that brings us right to your very first point in the conversation.
Great, okay.
You know, maturity.
Nice full circle, yeah.
Dealing with a situation where you put your egos aside and you understand, okay, well, my friend's probably angry with me because he missed me or she missed me, or it was important to – it's just understanding why people were overreacting, and challenges are part of any relationship, friendships being no different.
Yeah.
They will definitely test us and test the friendship they, you know, at the end of it, you know, gives you strength, and it builds trust, and it makes a stronger friendship. So, and how you handle these, and how you overcome these mishaps and misunderstandings and obstacles that get in the way, will determine what the quality of your friendship will be on the other side.
No. Absolutely. Well summarized. I couldn't agree more. It's so nice to have like a person when you talk to. I mean, we've had a few, you know, a little bit of a debate about it, but like, a lot of the points I totally agree with you on. So, the final thing I always ask people about is just basically future stuff. Is the plan to write a sequel to this, or, now that you're a published author, are you going to write more stuff?
Right. So, this book is the one that I've done in the pipeline. It's taken me, a lot of energy and time.
I can imagine.
I'm not thinking of the next one yet.
Okay.
However, what I will be doing is taking the message to the world.
Okay.
And in terms of being a coach and a speaker.
All right.
So I also do friendship coaching, which is, again, possibly the only person who's doing friendship coaching specifically. So I offer people the opportunity to, you know, learn how to make friends, even if it's same-sex friends, and how to deal with difficult friends, and how to overcome obstacles that makes you, that gets in the way of making friends. And because I believe so much that, you know, so much in connecting with each other, and how this can give you a rewarding life, my coaching is based on the premise of helping people to making long-term, sustainable, meaningful friendships, and building that network around them.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. I think what I need to do to wrap this up is to just let people know that Just Friends, The Ultimate Girl Guide to Male Friendships by Pamela Naidoo is available at Amazon. Is it available in other places other than Amazon, or?
Just Amazon.
Okay, so it's available exclusively to Amazon. If you want more information about the stuff that we've talked about, but in fairness, with this being an hour-ish long podcast, we have talked about this in detail. But if you want more information about what other people have thought in particular, you can go to www.platonicplanet.co.uk, which is Pamela's website. And are you on the Twitter? Are you on the tweet? I can't speak. It's been an hour. The Twitter. That's what I was trying to say.
Yes, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, all Platonic Planets.
Brilliant. So obviously, I encourage people to look them up. It's been an absolute pleasure, Pamela. I've really enjoyed this. I've been super excited to do this, and I'm really pleased we got the opportunity to do it before you went back to South Africa, obviously. So have a great time when you do.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. Just thank you so much for being open and honest with it. And it sounds like an absolutely amazing book. And I hope people who have been listening to this when it comes out in a couple of days, I'm thinking. So when it does come out, people get the opportunity to realize that friendship is important, and hopefully they'll buy the book and just thank you. I've really, really enjoyed it.
And feel free to reach out. I mean, I encourage your listeners as well to feel free to reach out and ask their questions about friendships. You know, I'm only just an email away.
Absolutely. I encourage people to do so. All that leaves me to do is I'll wrap this up and I'll talk to you afterwards very briefly at the end. But just to say to everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Geekapocalypse. I really appreciate it. If you're listening to this on iTunes, which you most likely will, please do consider subscribing and you'll get the latest episodes before anybody else does. And just huge thank you to Pamela for coming on. I really enjoyed it. And so I'll end the podcast like it always ends in the words of the great B-movie robot Josh Crash and Burn. And we'll see you very soon for another edition of the Geekapocalypse podcast. Thanks, guys. Bye.